Welcome back to Running for Beginners, the podcast where we help new runners build confidence, stay consistent, and discover just how strong they can be one run at a time. This month's episode is a special one because we're talking with a true powerhouse of hybrid endurance. Joining us today is Joe Rucco, the 2025 World's Toughest Mudder Champion. Joe isn't just a runner, he's a strength athlete, an endurance machine, and a testament to what the human body can do when you train across multiple disciplines instead of just one. We're diving into the intersection of lifting, running, and total body fitness, how strength training can make you faster and more resilient on the run, and how endurance improves performance in the gym, and what it really takes to train like a hybrid athlete at the highest level. If you've ever wondered whether picking up a barbell could make you a better runner, or whether running could make you a more powerful athlete overall, this episode is going to open your eyes. So lace up, settle in, and let's get into it. This is Season 2. Episode 10, The Hybrid Athlete. Today, I'm proud to announce that I've become an ambassador for StillIRun.org. StillIRun is a global nonprofit organization that promotes running for mental well-being so that people can live a healthier lives. Running for your mental health isn't about pace or performance. It's about feeling a little more grounded than you did yesterday. Their Mental Health Runner program from Still I Run is a free, self-guided, 12-week program designed to help people use running as a tool for mental well-being. This program provides free running shoes, a Still I Run tech tee, and a guided workbook with training plans, reflections, and education that meets you where you are. If you're ready to take that first step, apply today at stillirun.org/MHRP. Applications are reviewed monthly. Before we dive in, I want to properly introduce today's guest because his story is one of those that makes you pause and say, okay, this guy's built a little different. Joseph, or Joe Rucco, is 34 years old, married to his wife, Lindsay, and proud father of two young kids, Anthony, who's 3, and Rosalie, who's just 3 months old. Outside of training and racing, Joe works full-time as an engineer for a pharmaceutical company where he specializes in injection products. He holds a degree in biomedical engineering from Worcester Polytechnic Institute, where he also competed as a Division III varsity soccer player, a foundation that clearly helped shape both his athletic mindset and discipline. But where Joe really stands out is in the endurance and hybrid racing world. He's been competing in obstacle course racing for over 12 years now and has spent the last couple of years fully immersed in the hybrid racing scene. His resume is frankly ridiculous. Joe's a 3-time Orange Jacket winner at the World's Toughest Mudder, logging in over 100 miles each time. And if you know the world toughing mud, if you know anything about World's Toughest Mudder, you know that alone puts him in a rare category. In 2025, Joe raced across 15 different race weekends, towing the line 43 times with 22 podium finishes. He competed at 3 different world championship events in a single year and didn't just show up, he contended. At High Rocks World Championships, Joe raced in both mixed doubles and men's pro doubles. At World's Toughest Mudder, he didn't just survive, he won the entire event for 2025, covering 110 miles. And at DECA World Championships, he delivered an incredible series of performances, including first overall finishes in both Ruck Fit and Ruck Mile, along with multiple top 5 finishes across elite and age group time team events. What makes Joe's story especially compelling, and why I'm excited for this conversation, is that he balances all of this elite level racing, demanding engineering career, and life as a husband and dad of 2 very young kids. But he's not just chasing podiums. He's navigating real world responsibilities while pushing the limits of what's possible in hybrid endurance sports. This is a conversation about performance, discipline, balance, and what it really takes to compete at the highest level without losing sight of family and life outside of the race. So for listeners who may not know you yet, who is Joe Rucco and how did you go from athlete to World's Toughest Mudder Champion?
Yeah, so it's been a long journey. So I played soccer since I was 3 years old. I'm 34 now. I played essentially for 30 years of my life. When my son was born, I took a little bit of a hiatus and kind of focused on the obstacle course racing side of things. But I kind of found obstacle course racing and things like that when I was in college. It was kind of just like a fun endeavor with some of my buddies and you know, I think it was my junior year in college, 2012. And we just like on a whim, we're like, hey, let's go do a Tough Mudder. Let's see what it's all about. Went had a great time, and I kind of fell in love with it a little bit. And you know, they had fun. We kind of did a couple more together, but it kind of stuck with me, and I ended up kind of diving into that realm quite a bit more. And then in like the 2017, 2018 time frame, I went from kind of doing it more as like for fun. I mean, it was a slow transition, but more into like a competitive space of things. And in like 2018 was my first kind of ultra distance event. And that was an overnight race in Massachusetts that was it was a 5 mile loop course with obstacles, and it was 12 hours. No, it was 8 hours overnight. So started at
Wow.
midnight, went till 8 a.m. And I ended up taking like I think 14th place or something at that race. And that was kind of my first like endeavor into like the ultra scene of things. Ended up running I think 40 miles there, so or something like that. And so that was my previous to that, all of my training had been like, you know, 10, 15 miles tops, from a long run perspective. And like looking back on it now, I remember like those days being the 9 mile run was a struggle. And now I go out for 15, like it's essentially no problem, which is crazy to think about. And so from there, 2017, 2018, I kind of started diving in more into like the competitive space of things, realizing I could kind of grind my way through some of those longer events. And that was kind of like a not a specialty, but something I was good at. I was good at like just kind of like that moderate pain for a long time. And so then kind of expanded from there. In 2022 was the first time I was planning to go to World's Toughest Mudder. I had done a race there leading up to it called the Tough Mudder Infinity. That was an 8 hour race during the day. And then our son ended up being born in December. World's Toughest Mudder at that time was going to be, I think, the second weekend of November. So the timing didn't line up there, and I wasn't going to leave a month early from my son's due date to be like, oh, I might be gone when our son is born. So that didn't work out. I'm glad I was home. Obviously, he was born in December, but that was a good decision on my part. So then the next year I said, okay, 2023, I'm gonna go all in on World's Toughest Mudder. I'm gonna, you know, decide that's my kind of A race for the year. And train kind of specifically for that. And so obviously World's Toughest Mudder, 24 hours, 10 5 mile loops with 20 obstacles per loop. It has like a rolling obstacle opening, so it's not 20 obstacles the entire time, but by the end you're doing it all 20 obstacles. So that was my first kind of foray into World's Toughest Mudder, and a really good performance there. I knew I could put up good numbers, but the goal was 100 miles. I ended up getting 100 miles and taking third place at that event, for my first time like doing that event. And some people were like, holy crap, like what, how did you get here, like what happened? And it was, I was kind of on the scene obviously for a long time, but they had not heard my name because I wasn't like regularly on podiums and things like that. So to follow up to 2024, you know, trying to learn from my 2023 World's Toughest Mudder experience, going back to World's Toughest Mudder, you know, the goal was 100 miles again, try to get a better placement. Can I win? Can I get second? You know, something like that. And 2024 was an interesting year because it was in Florida that year. So in 2023 it was in Dallas, Texas. And 2024 was in Florida. So it was very hot. It was like 87 degrees at the start. And so it was quite warm. And I wasn't prepared for the heat, and the heat got to me. And so I still managed to get 100 miles, but I had to grind for 100 miles, and it was not easy or really a fun race for me. And so I learned a lot from that race, and then took those learnings into kind of specific training for 2025. And the nuance of 2025 was they moved the schedule up about 6 months. So originally, World's Toughest Mudder was in November of every year. In 2025, World's Toughest Mudder was moved to the end of June. And so I had 5-ish less months to prepare than I would have originally, and knew, okay, I need to get moving on this kind of stuff. And so I ramped up my training quite a bit. I specifically focused on some heat training aspects of things to account for what I learned from Florida, and brought all of that fitness into World's Toughest Mudder 2025, where I ran 110 miles, first place. And that was a fantastic event for me. I think I had a 45 to 60 minute lead on the second place person by like lap 10 or 11 of 22. So, and I was able to really take in the last lap of that event with two of my friends that happened to go, and they were racing as a team together at the event. And we like essentially just like chilled and walked for the last lap and just like kind of took it in together. So it was a really awesome experience there. And then obviously in the past 2 years, I've taken on some of the hybrid stuff too. So I've transitioned to, not transitioned away from endurance. Like that's kind of my main focus still. That's my bread and butter event. But I've transitioned a little bit into more of the hybrid space, some faster things, stuff like that. And so I've been dabbling in that a little bit more too, doing some teams races, doing some individual races, and kind of taking that a little bit more head on than I would have in the past.
So what pulled you towards hybrid training rather than focus on one discipline exclusively?
It's interesting because I've always enjoyed kind of what is now being touted as hybrid. Even during all of my endurance training, I'm still lifting heavy. I like to strength train. I like to do all of that stuff. I like to do that more than I like to run, if I'm being honest. Early on in kind of my post-collegiate career, if you will, I was looking into things like powerlifting and stuff like that as a potential option, as being competitive still from college soccer and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed that side of things. But then like my kind of shift in focus happened because I realized what I was kind of like my niche kind of skill set put me into like that grindy aspect of things. And so now with this kind of new emergence of the hybrid stuff, obviously I still like to be strong, I still like to lift, all of those things, but it allows for a little bit more of like a full body fitness, strength and endurance and the ability to kind of move fast and grind through some of these events, under fatigue and things like that, which kind of, leans it back into my skill set a little bit more of being able to like under fatigue still produce power, still produce the effort and all those things kind of consistently. So that's been the big draw for me is obviously I like individual races too, but the other aspect is everything I've done has been individual kind of up to this point. And now I get to do it like teams races with some of my like best friends for my fitness team and things like that. So that's been another cool aspect of transitioning from also individual races, but now incorporating teams races where I get to sell my soul with like my best friend and we just both collapse to the finish line, like out of breath, dying, all of those things. So it's been a really cool experience.
That is really cool. So was there a turning point where you realized strength training made you a better runner or vice versa? I mean, I go to the gym every day and then I'll run every other day or the same kind of thing. And I found that I shift back and forth. When I'm training for runs, I run heavy, and then when I'm not training for them, I kind of fall back into my niche of just lifting, with a little bit of running. But is there a turning point for you that you realize the strength training kind of helped you running or vice versa?
So I think for me, it wasn't really necessarily a turning point, is it was like I pulled those levers up and down, and I kind of found the balance that worked for me. But because like from when I was in college and things, we had strength training tests for, college soccer where fitness tests of back squats and bench press and pull-ups and like those types of things. So it was always kind of incorporated kind of from the beginning for me. But like understanding the balance of, being able to be durable in the gym and have the strength to move weights and the balance and the coordination and all those things, I found that translates really well, especially when you get to areas like trail running and things like that specifically, because you're not in like a flat plane at all times. So you have to be able to have that coordination of like, oh, I stepped on a rock and I'm like kind of off balance. And, can my muscles handle that? And are they strong enough to handle that? My tendons, my ligaments, all of those things. And the strength training aspect of that, like in the gym stuff, translated really well to the ability to handle kind of the nuances of the trail. And, most of the things that I do are on the trail or in a stadium or something like that. So it's like I'm not like necessarily on the roads of just like a flat kind of straight line type of scenario in terms of running. It's, fast turns, it's I'm pushing sleds, I'm doing these other things. And then when it comes to my endurance events, they're on the trail, they're up and down elevation, they're monkey bars and things like that too. So that like ability to have your muscles be able to sustain load obviously helps over a longer distance of things because you get less beaten down as you're, traversing long distances, and you get less kind of damage overall because you're used to holding, 200 pounds on your back, right? And doing some squats or something like that. That ability to handle the load lessens the damage that you get from just your body weight as you, traverse that time and space.
Gotcha. So a lot of runners, and this is, I don't know why, but a lot of runners avoid strength work altogether. I have seen really well-built individuals on the races, but typically they're not the muscular, set. So what do they misunderstand about it? Like, why do they do that? Why can't they be better at it, like strength training, and realizing that it helps their running, you know?
Yeah, I think a big piece of that is kind of the, I'll say stigma. I don't mean it as negatively as that sounds, but like there's in, I'll say like mainstream running and even high performance running when you're talking marathons and half marathons, obviously like that, right? You look at the top runners and they're muscular, but they're very thin. They're 130, 140 pounds, and they're able to run 4 or 5 minute miles, which is fantastic. But like can they then go from that and then do something in their daily life that, move a couch, can they do those types of things, right? I think the ability to kind of handle both aspects is huge in terms of like an everyday functioning person. I also think like when we're talking kind of everyday runners, even like sub elite runners, right? That this isn't their job, that, having a little bit more mass on your body is going to be beneficial in the long run. You don't need to be 130 pounds and run 430s, right? That's not your lifestyle, your job. So I think having the ability to build a little bit more mass that will translate well from a health perspective, I think as well. But also just like daily, happiness and life exposure is like, it's going to elevate that side of things, even if it potentially, and I think it's very minor, detracts from your highest ceiling of running, if you will.
Right. Okay. So what types of lifts or training blocks have translated to the biggest improvements in your running performance? I mean, you're running 5 mile loops with obstacles in between. So running is a part of what you do. So I'm just kind of curious at like what lifts help you out or think you think helps you out in that aspect for running.
Sure. So, like I do all of like the main movements. So if you think back squats, front squats, lunges, pull-ups, rows, things like that, like I do all the main compound movements in my training. Specifically for running, I think unilateral movements like lunges, Bulgarian split squats, things like that are huge because you'll get the stabilization like in your hip and your knee. To really take that force from like a single leg explosive movement, which is what running is, or essentially just jumping as you're going through the air, right? From single leg to single leg. So I think all of those types of things, explosive movements like box jumps and things like that, where you're getting some plyometrics, some explosion, some deceleration as you land, those types of things are huge for like carrying over to running as a whole and being able to take that force and that load over time. But I think from a strength perspective, I think things like squats and lunges are huge. Things like deadlifts can be really beneficial for your posterior chain, for your glutes, your hamstrings, things like that. Being able to kind of pull yourself through a stride, push off on the stride, calf raises, those types of things are really helpful. And I think doing them, and it doesn't have to be super heavy, right? You can do a kind of a high to mid volume of sets and reps on these things, and not try to go for a max lift and stuff. You don't necessarily need that. But I think like having external load on you that you have to then control and brace your core and engage those muscles to challenge them, I think translates well to producing power into the ground, and it could potentially help you kind of get faster overall. But I think there where the major benefit is in strength training is actually from a preventative standpoint in terms of you degrade less over time versus someone that wouldn't strength train, right? You might have the same amount of initial output power, but your power will degrade less over time because you're used to outputting that power and that strength over time in your strength training as well as your running aspects.
Very nice. So you answered a lot of the other questions there. So we're just going to move on to the running part. So how is you did, it was great. So how has running improved your ability to perform in gym-based or strength-based environments?
So I think the aerobic capacity piece of things, I think that's a hot term recently as well, but like the ability to like shuttle oxygen through your body and in your blood into your muscles, I think is huge. And that like lower effort area of running, even higher intensity, whether you're doing intervals or threshold intervals, something like that, that ability to flush lactic acid and lactate out of your muscles and the shuttle oxygen to your muscles, I think is a huge translation factor from running to the gym and the gym to running. And so that ability to go, okay, the as you're getting towards the end of an interval and you're building lactate in your muscles, it's very similar to the end of like a heavy set of squats, right? And so you're getting that lactate buildup in your muscles. It's starting to get hard. Your muscle output is lower. And so you get that very similar effect of like, can my muscle shuttle that out of the muscle? And so you can produce more power and produce that level of training that you really need for that adaptation. And so that like it's weird to think about, I think, for a lot of people that like those are very similar processes, but it is a very analogous thing where you get to the end of an interval and your legs are feeling heavy and crampy and those types of things is like set, rep 15 of a back squat and you're like, oh goodness, like that's when it like really matters and you can kind of work on those systems kind of collectively together.
Gotcha. So do you feel running increases your recovery, your mental toughness, or your work capacity for strength sessions? And I'm just going back to what you said earlier, that you used to have a hard time with 5 miles and now you're doing 15 regularly. So obviously the endurance is like built up in you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that from a, like, at least a mental standpoint, right, the ability to go longer is certainly something that has been, kind of built up and calloused over time. Is like I'm used to what the feeling is, when my muscles get tired and when my, aerobic system starts to get taxed and those types of things. And being able to translate that from running specifically into the gym is great for, especially for things like HYROX, where in the hybrid racing scene where it's like you're going from running to something else and the ability to move those things under fatigue is huge because that's, I mean, that's the whole race, right? You're running fast and you're trying to move something fast. And so that ability to output under fatigue, I think is massive in that translation from running where maybe you're doing like an interval workout, like I was mentioning before, where you have kind of some, slower paces and faster paces kind of together, that ability to recover while still moving in that slower pace area. I think that's kind of the spot where you can translate that kind of to the gym scene because your heart rate is lower in the gym, right? Unless you're doing some type of metabolic conditioning or something like that, or like HIIT training. Generally speaking, your heart rate is lower. And so that's where that translation kind of happens. And then like from a mental standpoint, the understanding that like as you progress your distance and your speed and things like that, that there is going to be a challenge and being able to push through those challenges, kind of you build momentum with yourself. I think at least in my experience where, 1 week I did, let's say 30 miles a week, right? And then next week I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go for 35 or, whatever. And saying like, oh, I went for a 10-mile run, I'm gonna try to do a 12-mile run. Obviously, it's still gonna be hard, right? Even though I did a 10-mile before, like moving to 11 or 12 doesn't seem like it's a huge jump. But if you struggle with the 10 and then mentally you're like, oh gosh, I gotta do 2 more miles and that was hard. That ability, like, okay, mentally it's like, okay, I'll slow down a little bit, like just a touch more than I would have for the 10. Like, can I push that limit just a little bit more? Can I edge that line just a little bit more to see like where I can get my body to make an adaptation? And I think as you push those limits, the shorter runs obviously will feel easier, right? But you also get that like extra little bit of kind of momentum as you reach those like little tiny goals along your path to whatever your final race is going to be. That helps like when you get to those kind of checkpoints in the race, you go, oh, okay, I've done this in training. I've done this part. I've felt like this muscular fatigue before, and you can kind of adapt and go, okay, I check that box. I know what this is going to feel like. I know what, mile, if you're doing a marathon, I know what mile 20 is going to feel like. And then it's just 5 more miles. I can run 5 miles anytime. Like I do that on a weekly basis, right? And you can get little checkpoints and mental wins and things like that that kind of like get you along that path and help kind of progress over time.
Nice. So if you were talking to someone who identifies more as a lifter than a runner, how would you encourage them to bring running into their routine without fear of losing gains? And I say it that way because that seems to be a common response when I talk to friends that lift and don't run. They're like, oh, I don't want to lose anything. They, cardio is a bad thing or whatever. So how would you encourage them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think and I think that's a very common sentiment in like the I'll say the avid gym goers, right? That like the built, physiques and muscles and all those things, I think. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I know a lot of people that are, very big individuals and have lots of muscle mass on them, things like that. One of my best friends, he's like 6'4", 230 pounds. Like he's a big dude. But he still goes out and he runs. He's not losing his strength or anything like that. So I think the biggest piece of that is one, eating enough. I think that the biggest piece of like losing muscular mass and things like that is when you're not getting enough calories in. And so your body is then searching for calories from some other spot, right? You're not getting enough recovery. You're not getting enough carbohydrates and protein and things like that. I'm not a dietitian, like, but still, like those things are required in order to help build those muscles and maintain those muscles. So if you're not getting enough and you go for a run, you're gonna pull energy from somewhere. And if you've burned through your carbohydrate stores, it's gonna go to your muscles at some point to help recover and repair the rest of the system. So I think there's a good chance that some of those people are likely eating enough to maintain gym performance and strength and those types of things. But as soon as they add in an extra layer, they're not accounting for that in terms of their caloric needs. And that's usually what ends up causing them to, in their words, like deflate, right? They lose their mass there. They feel like they're withering away, those types of things, because they haven't accounted for that extra calorie expenditure. And it like I've weighed the same for the past 4 years. I'm 185 to 195 in that range. And I eat a ton. Like I run a lot, I lift a lot, and I have like I've leaned a little bit over that time, but my body weight has stayed essentially identical. My muscle mass, my strength has stayed essentially identical in the past 4 years. A couple gains here, a couple losses there, but in the grand scheme of things, like being able to take in the amount of calories you need, maintain the recovery that you need from the training you're doing, you're not going to lose your big muscle mass and those types of things as long as you're accounting for it.
Gotcha. That's good too, because your episode's going to be following a nutritionist, and she was saying the same things that you were,
Oh,
all
great.
about the diet. Yeah, it's gonna tie in really well. So that's great.
Fuel your flow with Roan Supercharged Honey Packets. Roan was created to fuel moments of deep focus and peak performance with nature's best ingredients. Their honey helps you escape the noise and get in the zone. Roan Nutrition's Supercharged Honey Packets is nature's energy in your pocket. Their raw honey-based fuel gives a clean, natural boost of energy and has 4.8 out of 5-star rating from over 10,000-plus satisfied customers. Roan's Supercharged Honey allows for easy digestion, has all-natural ingredients, provides sustainable energy, and comes in delicious flavors. There's also caffeine-free versions. Roan's Supercharged Honey is powered by four real ingredients to fuel your flow, each with a purpose. Raw honey for energy, pink Himalayan salt for hydration, caffeine from green tea for clean focus, and lion's mane mushroom for mental clarity. They built Roan for those who demand more from their fuel, whether you're an athlete chasing peak performance, an entrepreneur deep in creative work, or a weekend warrior tackling new challenges. Roan is here to elevate your mind and body. Check them out at roannutrition.com. That's Roan, spelled R-O-N-E, nutrition.com. And for a limited time, if you use the code RUNWITHMIKE at checkout, you'll get 20% off your purchase. Just remember to use the code RUNWITHMIKE.
All right. So how do you balancing the two worlds for your training structure here? So what does a typical training week look like for you when you're balancing your strength and running? I've always been personally curious.
Yeah, that's a good question. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. And I want to like preface this with like, I do a lot of training for the things that I'm doing. I don't think, I mean, it's sustainable with my life and I've accounted for that, but I'm training between running and strength training between 15 to 25 hours a week total. So it's a lot of time. It's a huge commitment for the things that I'm doing. My current breakdown is I'm running between 5 and 6 days a week, and I strength train in the 4 to 6 days a week realm. I think it's usually 4 or 5. And so I'm doing doubles in terms of running and strength training days. I'm doing single strength training days. And I'm doing single running days. So I have on my faster threshold type days, I have an optional lift that I will add in depending on how the run goes and how my body is feeling afterwards. If I need some more recovery, I won't lift. If I'm feeling pretty good, I will. I have easy running days, which I will pair with a lift. And then I have a long run day, which is by itself. I only do the long run. And then I have a strictly lifting day where I'm not running. So I can give kind of my bigger days are a run and a lift. And then I have mm-hmm. some lesser days in terms of overall impact to my body where I'm only running or only lifting. Not to say that those aren't hard days. They still are, right? Like this morning I went for a 15-mile run. It took me a little under 2 hours. That's still impactful to my body. I didn't lift today because I knew that it built up fatigue and I'd burned, you know, close to 2000 calories and like those types of things. Like I'm depleted from that run and doing a lift on top of it likely isn't going to benefit me in some way, shape or form. So, my breakdown right now is 5 to 6 days of running and then 4 to 5 days of lifting every week.
All right. A little follow on here. When you're doing your doubles, right, you're lifting and you're running days, what do you do first?
You broke up a little bit on me there. I didn't catch the question.
I'm sorry. So like on your double workout days, when you're running and lifting, what do you do first? Do you lift first and then run, or do you run first and then lift?
So for me personally, I run first. Yeah. And that's mostly due to where my goals are, for the events that I'm doing. Right. So because I'm running, things like World's Toughest Mudder and things where running is the focus, I focus my priority on the running first. If I was in a more strength-based event in terms of my primary goal, I would flip those and I would say, I want my strength first because I want that to be the freshest. I want that to have the most impact on, you know, my adaptation, what I'm doing for my body. And then I would follow it with a run. But yeah, my current setup on my double days is run first, lift second.
Interesting. Okay. How do you prevent overtraining when both sides of your training demand so much from your body?
Yeah, that's a hard one. So I've fallen into this. I've definitely experienced overtraining before. I felt it. And so I kind of have a flow structure with the way I kind of periodize my training, where I'll have like kind of 3 build weeks and then one kind of like down week where the mileage comes down a little bit, maybe the intensity and the lifts come down a little bit. So I allow like still moving, still have intentionality with everything that I'm doing, but I have a less of an impact week, less intensity that week to allow that adaptation to really occur. And this has just been trial and error for what works with my body is I found that if I take that intensity week out, I have like 2 months worth until like I start to just get beat down. So I'll go like build for 8 weeks or so. And then like week 9, I'm like trashed. So I've kind of said, okay, I don't want that to happen. Where do I need to put these things in order to maintain a build throughout, you know, a 6-month, 9-month period leading up to this huge race where I know I need big volume. I know I need big intensity. How do I the overtraining, the recovery piece of it so that I can continue that long-term build? And so if anybody like looks at my Strava or something like that, they'll see my mileage kind of go boop, 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 and then drop down, and then do, 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 and then drop down. And that like drop down is in the range of the in between like the first and second week. And so I'm still kind of building over time. So like if you look at my mileage graph over a long period, it's still going up, but it allows for my body to go, okay, I just had a 80 mile week. Now I'm doing a 60 mile week. It feels like I'm not doing as much. I can recover. I can kind of adjust to what I'm doing. And same thing with like my strength training goals and things like that. So it's really finding the balance kind of for the person that is doing those things. And you kind of test to see like, where is your limit? And like I said, mine was through trial and error. Sometimes that's kind of how you have to do it, is like train for a few weeks and like, oh, I'm starting to feel like IT band, you know, a little bit, or my knees are starting to ache a little bit or something like that. And it's like, okay, maybe I need to back off. Maybe it's, I did that for 5 weeks and I'm starting to feel it. So maybe I need 2 weeks on and like 3 or 4 days of easy, right? And then 2 weeks on and 3 or 4 days of easy. And you can kind of adjust that as needed. And then as you're leading into a big race or a big event, you can kind of peak up for 4 or 5 weeks and really dial in for that event, and then come down after and make sure you get your big recovery after your big event has kind of come and passed.
Okay. Now this is one some plan, but again, one of those rabbit hole things, and I'll just make it kind of short, but did you ever use a coach to get you to where you figured all this out, or did you all just figure all this out on your own?
So I am part of a fitness team, if you want to call it that right now, that I have a coach. He's on the team. It's more of a collaborative relationship between him and I. And so I do 95 to 99% of my own kind of programming and training. I have my okay. entire kind of athletic career from college till now. Like I'll kind of present my training plan to him and say like, here's what I'm thinking. And he's like, he's pokes holes. He's like, are you getting enough recovery? Are you doing enough, you know, concept two erg work? Are you doing, you know, enough strength training, or what kind of rep schemes are you doing? Like those types of things. And he'll ask those questions of me and make me think about things that maybe I missed. And we just kind of talk through it. And so we have a really cool relationship. His name, if anybody is curious, is Kevin Gregory. And the team is Underdog Fitness. They're based out of Connecticut. But like I'm a remote, you know, athlete for them. So, but we work super well together, and it's just kind of like a bouncing ideas off of each other of like, hey, I'm thinking this, what do you think of that plan? Do I need to change anything? And kind of, we go from there.
Okay. Another rabbit hole, because I interviewed a running coach who does this online. He quit his job and now he does it full time, and he has remote all his, students, if you will, are remote. So from a non-professional perspective, I can see where people can use remote training and find it helpful. I'm pleasantly shocked and surprised that an athlete such as yourself can do the same thing and use remote training and find just as much value in it.
So it's interesting, because essentially from the start, I've trained by myself. And so now, being part of the Underdog Fitness team, I feel like I'm not by myself now, which is weird, because like I still do all of my runs by myself, like 99% of the time. But because I'm like part of the team and I have other sets of ears that like I bounce ideas off of, obviously my coach Kevin, but like there's several other individuals on the team, the people that I race with regularly, right? Like my buddy AJ, he's who I ran at High Rocks World Championships with. We ran at Decker World Championships together. And then Kelly, I ran with her at High Rocks as well. Like I essentially text them like, hey, I'm doing this. Like, what do you guys think? And like, we just bounce those ideas off of each other and like, oh, I'm doing 3 minute intervals today. And they're like, oh, well, what's your rest period between? And so we talk about that. So it doesn't feel like I'm running, you know, my training plan kind of by myself, even though all of my workouts for the most part are alone, right? I have a gym in my basement. I do all my lifting down there. I run on the roads at 4 o'clock in the morning, like in the dark, it's by myself. So it's a different feel now versus where I was a few years ago. where I wrote it by myself, I did it by myself. I didn't have a second set of eyes or anything like that. So now it's, even though I'm still alone, if you will, and being remote, I have a little bit more of that check-in, that accountability. And I think that's huge in terms of being able to progress over time as well.
Great. So, what kind of metrics do you track most closely? Your pace, your power output, your recovery markers, HRV, sleep, your Vox, your
I have a Garmin, and that's kind of like my window into kind of how I'm doing. The other big, I have two other pieces of, I'll say, sensors, if you will. One is a foot pod that attaches to my shoes for when I'm running, and the other is I have a temperature sensor that sits on my heart rate monitor, and that measures my core body temperature, during exercise. So I can do things like heat training and stuff like that, and understand like how my body is reacting from a temperature standpoint. Am I getting too hot? Am I not warmed up enough? I use it for like warm-ups as well. So it's like I like to be obviously normal body temperature, 98.5, 98.6 in that range, right? But when I go to do an event, I want to make sure my body is warm and prepped to go, prepped to put out high output. And so I'll warm up until it says like 100, 101, something like that, and get my like core temp up, sweating, like all of those things. And that's a huge thing for making sure I'm prepped to like really put out a good effort in, a race or an event. So those are kind of the two extra sensors. My biggest kind of like main stuff that I'll track on a regular basis, I think the biggest one for me is heart rate. I do a lot of training kind of by heart rate. All my easy runs, I make sure that I'm tracking that to make sure like pace doesn't really matter to me too much. Obviously, paces matter in some events, but on my like daily runs and things, like I don't really care about what pace I'm running. I'm shooting for a heart rate range to make sure that I'm getting the correct benefit from that run, whether it's recovery or aerobic work or threshold work, all those things. And then, like I said, in my training, I don't really look at pace at all, if I'm being honest. I look at my power. So my pod that I use is called Stride, if anybody's heard of it. It's a power-based system. It measures wattage. So think like biking and cycling. You typically use watts, produced over time as their kind of metric. It's a very similar thing, but for running. So how much force am I putting into the ground? On each push-up, each stride, all those things, I look at that, and so it translates really well to heart rate and pace thresholds and things. But it's a more, in my opinion, a more consistent thing over things like hills, because if you think about going up a hill, right, it requires a lot more effort, but your pace is a lot slower. And so if you're running by 6 minute pace is your threshold, you're probably well over threshold going up a hill. Running a 6 minute pace than you would be on a flat or a downhill. And so using something like a Stride pod can be beneficial for someone as dialed in as I'm trying to be, in terms of I want to keep my effort consistent for a threshold rep over time, right? And so if I'm going down a hill, my pace should probably go up, my power should stay the same as I'm coming down. And then similarly, as I go up a hill, I want my effort and power output to be the same, but my pace will likely come down. And so it helps me kind of normalize that effort over the course of 3, 6, 12 minutes in terms of whatever threshold rep I'm doing. And helps me gauge effort a little bit better and understand what it feels like on different inclines and different efforts, that I can translate a little bit better to a race scenario, at least in my head. Because I can understand like this is what it feels like going up a hill at threshold effort versus, 6 minute pace.
Okay. So this next one's about next couple of questions about mindset and grit and your mental game for the tough mudder. A couple episodes ago, I interviewed a sports psychologist out of Colorado Springs who'd worked with professional athletes like yourself, as well as special forces and different high like pro athletes like football teams and stuff like that. So mindset's a big thing, and I know it's got to be in your world. So for the world's toughest mudder requires, you know, intense, insane physical and mental resilience. How do you train your mind as well as your body? Because you're pushing through. You're pushing through 110 miles. It's not like you don't do this with a smile on your face and just, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've kind of, for my own personal, like, I'm getting up early in the morning. And I think that has helped, honestly, a ton, right? Is nobody wants to get up at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and get out the door and go for a run when it's pitch black outside and you put a headlamp on, like all these things, right? But I think, like, just the ability to, like, get up, like, it doesn't matter what I feel like, it doesn't matter what day it is, like that's my time to work out is in the morning, just given kind of like my family dynamic. And so if I want to do anything, if I want to compete at like these levels, that's the time I have. And so that kind of in itself has kind of caused me to be very mentally disciplined in terms of my alarm goes off, I get out of bed, I get ready, I do a little mobility session, and I get out the door and I start running. And it's like, it's, you know, the other day I have some silly pictures of me after some runs. It was -4 degrees up here the other day when I started my run. And I was covered in ice when I got, like, I did like a 12-mile run. My, you know, my mustache was frozen. I had goggles on, like they were frozen over, like, and so like the ability to just like get up and go no matter what the conditions are. I don't care if it's raining, I don't care if it's snowing, as long as it's not like a danger to my body and, you know, me being out there, I'm going out and I'm going to do my thing, right? And so that translates really well to a race where you have to run overnight and you have to have a headlamp on and you're going to be by yourself for most of the time. Like, I do all of my training by myself with very few exceptions. And so that translates, like, when I get to these races, you know, it's a 5-mile loop course, especially World's Toughest Mudder. There's people around all the time. And so to me, getting up and, you know, getting out the door at 4 or 4:30 in the morning to go run in, you know, 0 degree weather is a hell of a lot harder than running a loop with, you know, 30 people around you at any given time. And like, they know who you are. Generally speaking, I know who they are. And so they're like, oh yeah, let's go, Joe. You got it. Like, keep going. And I'm like, I'm getting that boost from that. So to me, I get to the race and that's easier, right? And it's like, I've done all of this training by myself. I now get boosts from all these people that know and support me at the race. And like that mental, like, help is huge in a race like that, right? Like, obviously I'm moving fast. They know I'm trying to win these races, but, you know, they're still like, yeah, you got it, Joe, like, keep going, that type of thing. And even the volunteers and stuff that you're going to see as you go through these races, like, they're supporting. They might not know who I am, but they recognize that they've seen me 10 times already, right, throughout the race. And they're like, oh crap, like, you're coming through again? Like, keep going, dude, like, you got it. And so like that kind of it is cool too. And so like the grittiness of kind of training by myself has translated really well. And then from like an actual like work capacity grit standpoint, like that's the piece that I've kind of fostered a little bit more as well in my training, where, you know, my intervals are not easy. And I don't have a lot of rest in my intervals, and it's just trusting that my body's going to do what it tells it to do. And so like I have 3 and 6 minute interval, like threshold interval sessions, where I'm at threshold for 6 minutes. I do what's called float rest, but it's still moving at like decent paces, but like you get a little bit of recovery. And so like it's for a minute. And so I'm running for 6 minutes hard, resting ish for 1 minute, and then I'm going again. And it's that like ability to go, yeah, I don't feel good yet, but we're just going to get into it and see how it goes. And that ability to just click back in, I think, kind of regardless of how your body feels, you can build that over time. It doesn't have to be 1 minute right off the bat, right? It can be a 3 minute interval and then you rest for 2 minutes and you go, I don't feel fantastic, but I think I can still do it. And like you build that callus over time, you build that mental kind of ability to go, it doesn't really matter that my legs feel tired. We're just going to give it a shot, right? If you end up only running for 2 minutes, you only run for 2 minutes. And then next time you try again, right? And I think that ability to understand what your body is feeling and go, my body wants to quit, I can tell it to keep going. is a trainable thing that you can kind of practice in your own training. And I think it's really helpful to kind of do that, because at some point in your races in your running career, you're going to get to, mile 22 of a marathon. Your body's going to go, I don't want to do this anymore. And you're going to go, well, I got 4 miles left, so here we go. And you got to figure it out from there. So I think that, like, that little training aspect of kind of like not tricking your body, but understanding what things feel like and knowing you can get more out of it is huge for, I think, any event, but running specifically is, because you're kind of doing the same thing for a long time, you understand like how that fatigue builds and the ability to get just like that little bit extra out of it kind of towards the end of a race.
Gotcha. So, what did you learn about yourself during any specific event that you wanted to share that you didn't know before? Like person enlightenment kind of thing.
Yeah, so 2024 World Toughest Mudder was probably the biggest like learning race that I had. And that was, I went into that race going, saying to myself, like, I can go win this race. Like, my fitness is here. I know it's in a good spot. Like, I can go win this thing. And after like 8 hours, 6 hours, I knew that wasn't gonna happen. And so in that moment, I came back and I've already run 30 plus miles at that point. It was, I came back to my crew in World's Toughest Mudder. You have a pit crew in a pit area, if you want. And so my pit crew was there. I came in, they knew I wasn't on pace for where I wanted to be. And I said to them, like, I don't know what's wrong. Like, something, it's not like, I don't know what's happening. And like, my coach was there as part of my pit crew, and he was just like, what are you gonna do? And so, like, I was like, well, I'm not saying I'm stopping. Like, I'm gonna keep going, but like, it's not the day that I wanted to have, right? And so I think like that was like subconscious for me. Like, it was, there was never an option for me to go, I'm done, I'm not gonna continue going or anything like that. But that was a big thing of like, okay, things aren't going correctly. We knew that early on in the race, right? Like, I was overheating from the temperatures in Florida, and it was not going well. And it was never a thought of, well, I should probably just stop, right? Like, I'm not going to win, I'm going to stop. And that was not on the cards at all. It was, how can we get the most out of this? How can I push my body to get the most? Do I need to slow down? Do I need to get ice on me or something like that? And so we adapted to the situation in the moment. And they had like ice buckets and, filled some water bottles with like ice and things like that to help cool me down. So it was like, I would come through, dump a little bit of water on myself and kind of keep going. By the time like 50-ish miles rolled around, we knew we were off pace for anything. A kind of, we were right on the edge of 100 miles. And so that was kind of the goal, at least 100 miles, shoot for a win. And so I was a little bit off pace of where I needed to be, and a little flip switched there, because, well, I had an emotional moment with my crew. It was like, I'm so sorry, like, you guys all came out here and this is not the performance that, you guys, I wanted to give for you guys and all this stuff. And we had a little bit of a pit crew moment, and kind of said, like, my coach was like, well, what do you want to do then? Like, if we're here, like, what's the next thing? And I was like, I'm gonna keep going. So, I got out in the next couple of miles, and he came in, and the next couple of laps were a little bit better, right? But they were still nowhere near the pace I needed to be to like even contend for, a top five spot or anything like that. So he said, as I came in for the next one, he was like, well, do you want to keep doing what you're doing, or do you want to go hunting? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, there's a guy, in front of you. He's about 3 minutes ahead. And I was like, all right, let's go get him. And like,
Sniping
it
these
flipped a
people like
switch for me
Strava.
to like, no, exactly. And so it kind of flipped a mentality switch, where it was less about kind of where I was mileage wise or performance wise, but it was, okay, like, your goal is 3 minutes ahead. Go get it. Like, it's right there. It's not 30 miles away. It's 3 minutes away. And so it was a switch of mental kind of like direction that allowed me to give more in the moment. And so that's what we did for the rest. That was like 12 hours into the race. We did that for another 12 hours. And it was like, wow. The next guy was, I'd come in, he was like, oh yeah, you got two of them. Like, there's two more guys, go get them. Next guy's eight minutes ahead. The guy after that is like a mile out. And I'm like, okay, like I just got to go a little bit faster. And so I ended up coming in on my 95 mile lap with like 2 or 3 minutes to spare. Like before the start line cut off and you couldn't start another lap. And I came in, they're like, do you want to stop? And I was like, no, I came here to get 100 miles. And so I went out, I was like the last person, one of the last people on course. I was the last person to finish to get 100 miles there. So I ended up finishing in ninth place. But what that really showed me over time was it doesn't really matter how terrible you feel or anything. Like, you can get more from your body. You can get that resilience. You can push. You can change, like, the way you're thinking about something to get a little bit more out of your body. It wasn't, oh God, I have 30 miles left. It's, oh, I have 3 minutes. Like, I just got to push for 3 minutes and catch that guy. I knew all the people, so I knew exactly who I was looking for. And so it was like, okay, I caught him. Like, I can relax a little bit. I can pick up, you know, I can get my legs moving a little bit now and get to the next thing. And you can kind of set these, I'll say, checkpoints where it's like, okay, I see a tree, you know, on a normal run. Like, I see that tree. I'm going to go faster than that tree and then I rest for a little bit. It's a very similar thing of like these mental checkpoints in these big races that maybe don't go to plan, but you can reorient them so that you can get the absolute most you can get out of it. And I think that was a huge kind of like learning experience that I've now been able to kind of put into even my training now, like threshold intervals, things like that. It's like, okay, before you look at your watch, like, get to that, you know, telephone pole. And it's like, okay, I got there. Okay, I have 30 seconds left. I can make it 30 seconds. You know, that type of thing, those like mental games and things that you play to get just that little bit extra, like 1% out of your training and your racing.
Outstanding. I thought I was the only one who did that silly stuff.
Hey friends, I want to take a second to tell you about a product that I've come to love for my long runs. It's called Caffeine Bullet from PerformanceBullet.com. I've been using them now for over a month, and I love the Mintense flavor the most. Caffeine Bullet isn't like regular gels, drinks, or pills. They are chews that use buccal absorption, meaning the caffeine is absorbed through your cheeks and gums as you chew. This way, it hits your bloodstream in as little as 5 minutes, kicking in up to 3 times faster than other sources of caffeine. That faster release is a game changer, especially mid-run when you need the energy right now. Caffeine Bullets improve performance across all distances, from 5Ks to ultras. I make them a necessity in my running kit, and you should too. For a limited time, if you go to performancebullet.com/runningforbeginners, you'll receive a 20% discount on your purchase. Or go straight to the website and use the code RUNWITHMIKE at checkout.
Just some practical takeaways for the listeners. So what would a hybrid runner training plan look like for someone starting from scratch?
Okay. So it depends, I think, a little bit on the race that you, or the event that you're planning to do. And so if you're just trying to do like a marathon, but you want to like incorporate strength training as like a hybrid athlete, if you will, I think that's going to look kind of significantly different than someone that is going to try to do a HYROX for the first time. And so there is like a bit of nuance there. In the amount of strength training and the specificity of the strength training that you're doing. If we're just talking kind of like general, like do strength, do running, and have them be able to combine into kind of like everyday fitness and things that you can kind of apply anywhere, I think obviously running is going to, like, to me at least, that's a harder thing to kind of develop the skill. Like, it's both a skill thing and an aerobic and metabolic fitness thing that you need to develop. And so, like, you can teach technique in the gym, and that's great. Technique teaching and learning technique from a running standpoint, I think, is a little bit harder. So if you need help there, I think reach out to a coach or something like that to help with running form so you're not getting injured, those types of things. But from a breakdown perspective, I think effectiveness can happen as little as 2 to 3 days of strength training per week, especially if you're just getting started. I think 2 days is plenty. And continuing to run on those other days, I think the biggest factor that people are likely to overlook is the recovery piece of trying to combine those two. And so ensuring that you're getting the recovery on, say you're doing like an every other day type of thing where you're doing like a run, then a lift, then a run, then a lift. I think that like maybe you do that for 6 days and you take a rest day on, maybe it's a Sunday, maybe it's a Saturday type of thing, to get that recovery back in. And then as you build that over time, you can start to incorporate like maybe an extra little easy run on one of your lifting days or something like that. Kind of as you merge those two a little bit more, or incorporate some interval running, like if you're trying to shoot for a High Rocks or a DECA event, something like that that incorporates running and lifting, having some type of, little interval section, or something like that where you run for a half mile and then you do a station or, do a little bit of ski or you do some back squats or something. It's just like incorporate a little bit of both at the same time. It doesn't have to be super intense as you're getting started, but having the ability and the adaptation to have a little bit of fatigue from either the running moving into the strength training or the strength training moving into the running is going to be beneficial for adapting and being able to take on some of these hybrid races and events that are kind of popping up these days.
Okay, that's great. So it's kind of a two-part question because I'm reading it and I'm thinking about a follow-on here, but what nutrition or recovery tactics allow you to perform at such a high output level?
So from a recovery standpoint, I think the biggest recovery tool that people can do is sleep. And I say that knowing that I personally don't get enough sleep, right? I'm not sleeping enough. I'm getting up at 3:30 in the morning. I'm going to bed at, 9 o'clock. So I'm getting, who knows, 5, 6 hours of sleep. It's not enough. I know it's not enough. So don't do what I do. Do what I'm going to propose. I think that sleep is the one biggest factor. If you can get more sleep, get more sleep. I think that the bang for your buck you can get from taking a nap versus like doing some compression boots or some, sonical plunge or something like that is going to be exponentially more than what those things can offer you. Those things are great if you have time to do those things. They're wonderful. And I think like if you're in between sessions and like you're doing a double day or something like that, jumping in a cold plunge or getting some compression boot therapy or something like that is going to be fantastic to help you like get to that next session. But in terms of like overall recovery, sleep and enough nutrition is like your two biggest levers that you can pull that are really going to be effective in getting you to that adaptation and getting to the next day and being able to train hard on a daily basis and getting the 2 year race day not injured as well. So I think from a nutrition standpoint, when we're doing all of these things, right? And again, I want to just clarify, I'm not a dietitian, so I know your last guest was, so hopefully she spoke to this stuff too. But carbs and protein, I think, are your friends. Carbs get demonized a little bit in today's day and age. And protein is like one of the hot terms of like, oh my God, you need so much protein. There's protein in everything. And it's like, yeah, great. Protein is wonderful. But I think carbs are overlooked from a performance standpoint, right? You need to have carbs to be able to put high output on the floor and into your feet and in the gym and all those things. And so that's your high octane fuel, if you will. And your protein and your carbs post-workout are your, like, if we're using like a car analogy or something like that, right? You go into you fill up your gas tank before you go do your threshold session or whatever, right? And that's your like quick carbs beforehand. Make sure you top up your gas tank, those types of things. And then you move to after, right? You've now emptied your gas tank, right? You don't just go, okay, I'm good. I'm gonna keep driving to the convenience store and like all that stuff with an empty gas tank. You need to fill it back up. So you need carbs and then the protein and the healthy fats and like all of those things that you're getting on a daily basis, your electrolytes. Sodium, magnesium, potassium, all of those things, that's your like scheduled maintenance aspect of things in terms of like your oil changes, your, windshield washer fluid, your, all of these things that help your car run, your transmission fluid, all of that stuff Like that's the protein. That's making sure that your engine doesn't explode. All of those things are helping to kind of maintain that high performance engine that you have. And the carbs are the fuel for the engine. And so I think more people need more carbs than they think they do, with a high output training that most people are trying to achieve, especially in the hybrid space, right? People are absolutely murdering themselves in the gym and they're going like, I don't know why I can't recover. It's like, well, you have no fuel in your system. And you need that fuel to be able to perform at a high level, and you need the protein and those other things to maintain your body and maintain your joints and your ligaments and all of these things so that you can effectively, output that power and that effort on a daily basis.
That's terrific. You kind of answered the other question about mistakes that new hybrid athletes would make, and that would slow their progress. And it seems like
Perfect.
the fuel, yeah, the fuel and the recovery, if they're not familiar with what they need, is probably one of the biggest mistakes they're going to make. So
Yeah,
since you're just
absolutely.
doing.
And I think even to add on to that a little bit, is that from a hybrid standpoint, like I think a mistake that's certainly possible is like lifting too heavy as well, because for the most part, like the hybrid stuff, like you have sled pushes and sled pulls that farmers carry, those types of things that are, I'll say, relatively heavy. Like they're not easy things to move and pick up and those types of things, but they're not like unwieldy for most people, right? Especially if you're going, first time, if you're doing, I'll say, what's called the open division, right? Those weights are certainly able to be moved by the vast majority of people. And so like you don't need to be lifting 500 pounds and like really trying to push those high-end weights in the gym. And so if you're doing that and you're starting to like really like hurt your like there's potential for injuries and things like that as you push that upper echelon of weight, especially if you're not used to it getting started. And so I think like building slowly over time, obviously you want to build strength and you want to get used to whatever is weight is challenging for you, but you don't need to like jump off the deep end immediately into like, oh, I need a back squat 315 pounds, right? Like you probably don't. Like the sled in the grand scheme of things, it's the force that you're exerting is nowhere near that, right? But I think it's helpful to push a challenging weight for whoever that person is, but jumping right into massive weights and things like that is a much higher risk and reward to those people as they're getting started.
Terrific. So to close this out, what are you training for right now? What's next? What can our listeners look forward to?
So, World's Toughest Mudder for sure, 2026. It's at the end of June, in the United Kingdom again. Same venue as it was last year. The plan is to go back and try to defend the title there, try to put up some big mileage again. That's the kind of the A plus goal race for me. In the like the most near term race that's coming up is I'm doing the High Rocks in Las Vegas. And so that is I'm doing an individual race. I'm doing, sorry, I'm not doing an individual race there. I'm doing three teams races and one relay. So a team of four and three teams of two. And so that'll be kind of that weekend. Hopefully I can qualify for the two of those doubles races for the World Championship, which is also in June in Sweden. So that's the next like most near term race. And then hopefully I can get qualified to the World Championship there. But then we also have the DECA events and things like that coming up. And we just had the World Championship for that a couple of weeks ago. But then that will happen again in December of next year. So the plan is to get back there as well. But that season is like just getting started now. So I probably won't get into a DECA until probably in the May timeframe, if I had to guess.
Okay, that's really impressive. That brings up another question here before my last one, really, is are you sponsored by anyone? I mean, I'm gonna ask you for your social contacts and your coaching contacts again, so I can put them in the show notes. But I'm just curious with all this travel and all these races and all this training. I mean, unless you're independently wealthy. Yeah, you're. I hope you have some sponsors, and if you want to give them some shout outs, I'm sure people would love to know who they are.
Yeah. I wish I had sponsors. I have absolutely zero sponsors. I do all this out of my own pocket.
Not.
Yeah, so I am I'll be completely honest that most of the companies these days are looking for high profile social media people, and I'm not a social media person. And so I post my races, for mostly for myself, so I can have, evidence and, have the memories to look back on and all of those things. But I'm not interactive enough on social media. I don't have the following on social media that these companies are really looking for in terms of their brand exposure to get sponsorships and things like that. And I'm okay with that. Like, I don't, that to me, that requires a lot of effort that I would rather put into my son, my new daughter, my wife, my family, and my training, right? And so if I were to do something like that, it would take away from that time, and that's significantly important for me. And I have a good job, and it pays well for, being able to kind of utilize that as my source for to do these things. And I'll say it this way, is like, I don't do a lot of like social events in terms of like going out and stuff. So most of my income can go towards family and can go towards these races. So, that's the benefit of being a little bit less of a social butterfly, if you will. I'm very much an introvert, but it allows me to do these other things, which I enjoy. So it works in my favor, at least in this scenario.
No, outstanding, outstanding. So, where can listeners follow your training? I've saw your I'm obviously I follow you on Instagram, so I saw that the DECA posts that you made. But where can listeners follow your training and connect with you online if they had to?
Yeah, so I'm probably the most active on Instagram. It's Joe underscore Rucco, so Joe underscore Rucco. And then I have a Strava account. It's public. People can go look at any of the training that I do. It's Joe Rucco on Strava as well. So those are probably the two most like active spots that I'm at. I don't really do a lot of other things. Like, I don't have a YouTube channel or anything like that. So those are the best spots to get to me if you want to chat. I'm open to any chat. Like, I've had people reach out about training before, just general questions about people that haven't done World's Toughest Mudder before. They've reached out. I have absolutely no problem answering, messages and things like that on Instagram. So people have questions, even if they have questions about some of the stuff we've covered here, like, happy to chat with anybody that wants some time and wants to reach out.
Outstanding. Well, thanks. And I wish you would have corrected me on how to pronounce your last name until the very last second of this interview, because now I feel like a heel that I've been saying it wrong. I should have been saying Joe Rucco the whole time. Sorry. I apologize about that. Well, thank you very much for your
It's
time, Joe.
fine.
I appreciate your time. I really do. Thank you very much. And thank your wife for giving you the time, because I know she wants you right now to take care of the kids, probably. So give her a break.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you for having
Thank
me
you
on.
very
It's
much.
been fun chatting with you, and hopefully bring some value to the people that are listeners and things like that. So, like I said, if anybody has questions or follow-ups or is curious about anything else that I'm doing, feel free to reach out. I'm not gonna ghost you if you send me a message or whatever. So I'm very open to that. But it's been fun talking, so I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Joe. Have a great day, man. Joe Rucco, 2025 World's Toughest Mudder Champion. What an absolute masterclass in hybrid performance and strength-based endurance. If you're listening to this and been a runner who's been hesitant to add strength training, or a lifter who's been avoiding the treadmill, take this as your sign. You don't have to choose one or the other. Building a stronger body can make you a better runner, and becoming a better runner can make you stronger everywhere else. Joe, thank you for sharing your insights, your training approach, and the mindset behind taking on one of the toughest races on the planet. And to you, the listener, if you found value in today's conversation, share the episode with a friend, training partner, or someone who's on their own fitness journey. It might be the push they need. Keep running, stay strong, and let's run forward together. Thanks for listening. I hope you hit the like button, follow the podcast, and share with your social media contacts. You never know who in your circle has wanted to run, but for whatever reason was too shy or fearful to undertake the challenge. I hope to point out the inclusiveness of running and give information that's accessible and relatable from a relatively new runner's perspective. Any products advertised on this show and purchased using the codes RUNWITHMIKE or RUNNING FOR BEGINNERS will earn me a commission. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you want more tips, tools, and training support for new runners, you can find us at Running for Beginners on all major platforms. Don't forget, you are responsible for your own health. Please talk to your doctor if necessary before starting any new physical activity. This podcast was created, written, produced, edited by myself, Mike Fleming. The show music is Every Day to Play by Ethos.